Sunday. So a longer schedule this year. Get the tickets and all kinds of information at denverfilm.org. And August 5th, Aurora is having its first Pride, 1515 Alameda Parkway on the Great Lawn. From 10 to 8 p.m., there'll be food, trucks, entertainment, and booths. Next week, Sean will interview Black Lives Matter queer activist Elle Hearns at 6:30. You can hear us right here on KGNU, or always you can go to news.kgnu.org and look for Outsources, and you'll find this show as well as all of our shows after they have aired. Good evening. This is Karen Rayforth.
Well, the time is now 1 minute after 7. You're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. It's time for Opera Box for the next hour. My name is Gary McBride. I'll be with you from Opera Box through the Classic Monday. And I've got a lot of great music for you this evening, so I hope you can stay tuned.
If you are listening to this message, chances are your future clients are as well. Learn how to become an underwriter on one of KGNU's many impacting programs by emailing Kenneth. That's K-E-N-N-E-T-H at KGNU.org.
Going to be listening to an opera by the Italian-born composer Paola Prestini, who happens to be the CEO and artistic director of National Sawdust in Brooklyn, which is a center of contemporary music. The work we'll be hearing is a short opera entitled Aging Magician, which was composed over a 5-year period in various workshops, premiered in the spring of 2016 at the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, and had its New York premiere at the New Victory Theater in Brooklyn. And we will be hearing the cast recording of that performance. A number of people worked on this hybrid theatrical work. It's a play, a paper puppet show, a concert piece for children's chorus with string quartet. Director Julian Crouch was involved in creating the work. Julian has also worked with Hedwig and the Angry Inch on Broadway, Philip Glass's Satyagraha at the Metropolitan Opera. Librettist Rinde Eckert is also instrumental in this work in that he also portrays the principal character, Harold, and we will be hearing him. He is the aging magician, and let's listen to the story. Harold is a middle-aged, solitary sad sack who earns his living making and repairing clocks. What really consumes him, though, is the children's book that he's been writing for years. It's about an aging magician who must pass on his book of secrets to a receptive child, a magician heir. But before he can do so, the magician collapses and is rushed to the hospital. So how should Harold end the story? And why is he finding ending the story so difficult? The aging magician deals with death. When Harold becomes confused, he takes out his accordion or rides his too small bicycle around his shop. He often hears the voices of children calling him. And so to complete his storybook, Harold must confront the magician's death. No, he decides, the magician must live. But that's not how things end, the chorus reminds him. Instead, he has the magician disappear and then reappear as a child. At this point, Harold enters some wondrous place, a heavenly realm that looks like the insides of an enormous clock with gears and wheels that are played like musical instruments. Let's listen now to the New York premiere performance recorded by the cast of the New Victory Theater in the spring of this year, 2017, We'll hear Rinda Eckhart as Harold, along with the Brooklyn Youth Chorus and the Ataka Quartet, performing the opera Aging Magician by Paola Prestini.
The Aging Magician, that's the title. It starts at the end, as he's dying, or not dying, almost dying, or I don't know. I have to decide. Anyway, he's looking for a protege. That's the point. Someone to carry on the work. He has a book of secrets, stage magic, fantastic tricks. He wants to pass it on to some child, the right child. It starts when he sees him, this boy in a market in Marrakesh or Cincinnati or I don't know. The aging magician knows this one will understand. This one can be trusted with a book. This one will see the elegance of his signature magic acts. The time pendulum, the moons of Neptune, the 18,000 invisible birds, all his best tricks, a lifetime of magic. And there he is, this boy in the marketplace. And the aging magician thinks, tomorrow I give them to the boy, the book and the watch. I explain and give the book to the boy and the watch. But that night on the train home, the aging magician collapses. They rush him to the hospital. He can't speak. His heart stops. Here is the passage in the book. He could feel the sudden uncertainty of his heart, feels his legs losing their purpose, feel a rush of air as he spilled to the floor of the train. From then on, there were only flashes of consciousness, the shadow of a figure, a face, then the feel of arms carrying him, fingers on his wrists and neck, a flicker of blue or green, the odor of disinfectant, the rosewater breath of a woman in white leaning over him. Stay with me now, Harold. Then the darkness and the voices of children.
sat on the table. Is it me or some other guy? Someone I used to know. Who is that they're working on?
No one.
I've seen him before. I've seen him in some photographs. I've seen him before. I know that face of his from somewhere. I've seen him before, so long ago. His hands are like mine. Someone should offer him some kind of prayer.
Grant him eternal rest,
and let perpetual light shine on him.
Grant him eternal rest.
Grant him eternal rest.
There he is in the emergency room, seemingly lifeless, his consciousness out of body, hovering above himself, drifting away as the oxygen machines wheeze and sigh, trying to breathe life back into this still figure on the table. Then suddenly, guided by children, he finds himself boarding a train. His soul is on a train out. To where? Some kind of heaven?
Island Sky!
Grand Canyon!
Tuscany!
Great Barrier Reef!
Venice!
Antelope Canyon!
Bali!
Galapagos! Coney Island!
Coney Island?
Coney Island?
Yes, Coney Island. Why not? Coney Island. He remembers a certain day, the aging magician. A special day. One sees oneself as a boy at Coney Island with one's parents in the shadow of the giant wonder wheel on the beach, rooting in the sand, unearthing something wonderful, the shell of a horseshoe crab. And one has, at that moment, one's first big idea. One's young mind is startled into being by a sense of time, staring at the shell of this primordial creature, considering the passing of a million years, for the first time imagining the rise and fall of empires, billions of births and deaths. And throughout it all, deep in the sea, the horseshoe crab scuttling through the millennia, completely unconcerned. In that instant, one is no longer the simple boy one was. Time has changed him, me. Then, suddenly, one is thrown up onto one's father's shoulders, told to hang on. One is suddenly flying, weaving through the crowd on the beach, the horseshoe crab held tightly in one's small hand. And time has disappeared. Father, son, the shell of the primordial crab, the past and the future, all one. Timeless on the beach at Coney Island, careening. I can't work on the book as much as I'd like. I've got my shop to tend to, pocket watches to repair, antiques and clocks, the old ones, the elegant ones, with wheels and gears. Time stops in the shop sometimes, and space. I could be anywhere, Barcelona, Perth, Cairo, anywhere, anytime. Like my aging magician, on the table, but out of body. Time, suddenly, without any power over me. Time, as the illusion of the linear, is a crude thing, stubbornly moving in a straight line, creating history, religion, regrets. But clocks, old clocks, with hands following each other in constant motion around a fixed point. The hands revolve like the planets around the sun, like the sun around the galaxy, like the galaxy around whatever galaxies ultimately revolve around. I work on the book when I can. It's almost done, I think. He's dying. He's not dying. Oh, he's dying. Or not. One is at Coney Island, on one's father's shoulders, running. Then on the train, a tired boy falling asleep on his mother's lap while his father hums a tune. And the wheels of the train go round and round. And one is sleeping on the lap of one's mother. And one's father is singing softly.
Coney Island, take me to the fair.
He would have been 9 at a street fair when a stranger approaches him, takes his hands, looks at them hard, says, "You have the hands of a magician. You can't do it without great hands. But it's more than the hands. You have to have the soul of a magician, the eyes. Without the eyes and the soul, it's just a parlor trick, just sleight of hand. Love, it's a kind of love, love of the object, the thing held in the hand. And when you finally step into the light, remember to be as surprised as they are, as if you are seeing for the first time, as if the cards have a mind of their own. Don't think ahead, don't look back. The magician always has all the time in the world. Come be amazed like a child on the boardwalk. Stare like a child at the lights and the shapes. Watch the magician disappear from the stage when all that he leaves is his hat and a cane.
Watch the magician.
Sitting here.
Has it been since your last confession?
Tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock, tick,
tock. I tried to stop writing it, the aging magician. I tried not writing, tried being diligent, getting my work done on time. But I missed him, it. And the shop would get so quiet, deathly quiet, quiet as a church. Forgive me, Father, it's been 6 months since my last confession. I don't know if I've sinned or not. I assume I have, but nothing particular comes to mind. Oh, I lied to my sister. I told her I was working on my clocks when I wasn't. We're a dying breed, clockmakers. We used to be like gods, the clockmakers. Real magicians, masters of time. Now time is just ticks, just an endless procession of ticks. Nothing revolves anymore. Nothing reminds us of the planets, of orbits, of what we are, orbiting bodies, orbiting, always returning to the point of origin. Forgive me, Father. I can't help dreaming of these things. In her hands, as she adjusted my tie and jacket, as she held her rosary and slid us into dark cold pews at church and turned the pages of a prayer book, pointing to the place I had to look. My mother's faith was in her hands. That went half mad with grief after my father's death, and trembled as she prayed and couldn't find the stillness they had known before. My mother's faith was in her hands.
that held her hymnal tight and trembled as she prayed or sang and reached out in the dark to pull me to her and couldn't feel how hard they held me. My mother's faith was in her hands that dived and fought like seagulls over scraps. Fighting for scraps like hungry seagulls, she couldn't find the stillness when she prayed.
The hungry lost a deep mass in a. The hungry lost a deep mass in a.
Is this my finale, then, thinks the aging magician? The last transformation, a disappearance, abrupt like this, simply collapsing? One thinks of William Robinson, turn-of-the-century magician, who called himself Chung Ling Su, pretended to be Chinese so he wouldn't have to speak during his act. He always ended his show by catching a bullet from a firing squad in his teeth until one day, everyone in position, the music thrumming as the firing squad stage right raises the rifles, aims, and bang! Chung Ling Su, stage left, reels awkwardly, crumples to the floor. He cries out, "My God, something's wrong! Bring down the curtain!" The mysterious Chinese sorcerer in perfect English. "My God, something's gone wrong! Bring down the curtain!" William Robinson from Westchester, New York, accidentally shot in the last act of his magic life, died in a heap of bloody Chinese silk behind the dropped curtain, while the audience, confused, made its way out, grumbling to themselves. "What happened to the bullet catch? It's on the poster. We were promised. There was no magical finale." It should have ended with something like the 18,000 invisible birds, hundreds of small bits of paper rising above the stage as if acted on by the beating of 1,000 wings, or the moons of Neptune, seemingly weightless orbs circling, orbiting the magician, The applause, a roar, as the magician transfigures, becomes the 14th moon of Neptune. To the stars. So cold and blue my planet, so far away. So cold and blue. I can't let him go like this. I can't let him go. That's where the boy comes in, the boy in the hospital. And maybe it's the same boy from the market or just some boy who wanders from the bedside of his dying father. He's wearing a white jacket. His hair is combed. He wanders into the room by accident, finds the magician's book, drawings and diagrams of the most amazing oddness. And then he hears a voice. Take these things, boy. Take these things. One hides the book under one's jacket, and with my left hand on the book and my right hand holding the hand of my mother, I walk out of the hospital. I leave the house of the dead, and my life begins again with a magic book tucked under my arm. My head full of magic drawings and the diagrams of floating things. And suddenly, I'm at the aquarium with my father, staring from the dark at the illuminated fish, just the two of us in the dark staring, while schools of brightly colored fish swim before our eyes, reflect in our eyes so that our eyes become tiny oceans. Something still and beautiful. Walking in the dark from pool to pool. In each one a different kind of fish. Suspended in the water, in the half dark, my father's church, he said. I took them in. His eyes another kind of ocean, wet with wonder blue and green. The fish reflected in them, darting, flashing, then serene. Through my father's eyes I saw the fish,
There in the half-dark aquarium, our eyes were oceans. In the half-dark, both of us made young by wonder. And then the world was colored fish, both luminous and tender. And we were young with wonder, and the world was colored fish and tender.
Aquarium.
And tender.
Aquarium.
And tender.
Aquarium.
And tender. And tender. And tender.
I want to pull him back, revive his heart, his ancient heart, reanimate his hands so he touches things again, feels the weight of things in that extraordinary way of his, the way of a magician. But there is a schedule to be kept on the train from where you get on to some final stop, Venice or Shanghai or Chicago or Mumbai or Lagos or Johannesburg or Coney Island. Some ageless Coney Island where the lights shine like stars and words are useless. Words are just sounds, as incapable of explaining anything as any wordless object. Like every lovely mute object in the world, words are just shapes piled on a workbench like watches, crowding each other on the shelves like broken clocks, waiting for someone who's never coming back, someone who was never really there, a trick of light, a sleight of hand. You know how it ends, Harold. No more badinage. Write it, write it. The aging magician disappears and reappears as the child. The aging magician is lost in the wheels and gears of the train, the rhythm of the wheels and gears, the rhythm of his days, his years. And his time is now. His heaven, a kind of Coney Island, a trick of light, misdirection, mirrors and illusion. He is sound, he is light, he is weight and color, or simply the way something warms in the hand. Watch him vanish, Harold, into the heart of the clock, into time.
You are not in the world.
What a time has it? What a magician, the time is all about.
as Harold decides the fate of the aging magician. An opera by Paola Prestini, recorded by the cast of the New Victory Theater's New York premiere in the spring of this year. We heard Rinda Eckert as Harold, the aging magician, along with the Brooklyn Youth Chorus and the Ataka Quartet. You're listening to The Opera Box on KGNU, which is presented by the KGNU listener members, and this evening by My Local Music Lesson, enabling busy families and professionals to arrange for music lessons in the comfort of their own homes or at the location of their choice. My Local Music Lessons uses certified and fully vetted instructors to teach string, voice, and percussion lessons of various kinds. For more information, go to mylocalmusiclessons.com. Well, we've got time in this evening's program for one more aria. I thought we would listen to something by someone whom Paola Prestini has collaborated with, namely Nico Muley. This is an aria from his opera, Two Boys. If you want to find out what happens to Jake, you'll need to listen to the rest of that opera. That's Brian, I Have a Proposition from Two Boys by Nico Muley. Well, you've been listening to Opera Box here on KGNU. This is Gary McBride, your host, and I'm hoping that you will join us every Monday evening at 7 for the best in the classical vocal arts. Coming up next, a classic Monday.
Is there ever a time where you hear the last 5 seconds of a song that you love or wonder, what did that DJ just play? AfterFM.com is the answer. We have all of our archived shows on AfterFM.com, as well as exclusive content such as podcasts, as well as interviews and local artists. That's AfterFM.com. Go check it out.
Time is now 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. It's time now for a Classic Monday. This is Gary McBride. I'll be your host for the next 2 hours. We'll be listening to music by the English composer Gerald Finzi, his A Severn Rhapsody. Later on, we'll be sampling his amazing clarinet concerto. And also, the music of his daughter-in-law's sister, who happens to be none other than the famous cellist Jacqueline Dupre, and we'll hear the Elgar Cello Concerto.